I tell you what's bullshit. Not bullshit. Just going on a bit of a side tangent.
It's amazing in the radio, isn't it?
Don't get how litigious some big companies are.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. Fucking bite me.
I give a shit!
Well, this is me, Aid Bradshaw, saying this thing. On the show today,
yes!
There's a grizzly bear juggling chainsaws.
That's what we're doing.
Wow!
Well,
we love that
actually,
shit.
There isn't, but what have we got anyway?
Volta van Huys.
Switching off now.
Sorry, we have?
Yeah, we've Volta got Van Huys. Ruta van Fossum or whatever his
we're
name
gonna
is.
We're going to have a screaming match about web apps.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. A screaming match.
Aye.
Ian is going to scream.
We can talk about how everyone hates the Free Software Foundation.
Yes, please. Even though they did nothing wrong.
Dun 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 dun!
Lug Radio Live!
Lug Radio Live! 2007!
Because this is Lug Radio.
Coming right at you.
And, you know, your fearless presenters are...
Stuart Langridge.
Hey, Bradshaw.
Matthew Peter Ravel.
And John O'Bacon. And we have a good show. Long show today.
Aye.
Long show.
Better keep the intro short.
Better keep it short. Should we get going?
Aye.
Take one was better.
Recently, it was announced that the FSF... We're going to try and ban Novell from selling Linux. Anyway.
When you say announced, I mean by a credible source?
It was announced by all the kind of
it was on
usual
Reuters.
Sources.
It was on Reuters.
Reuters,
it was on Reuters,
ZDNet,
the Australian bulls.
It may even have appeared.
It was on news.
Might have been on Slashdot.
It was on Reuters.
And, you know.
Yeah, another reputable internet sources. Absolutely.
And although it was entirely fictional, quite a lot of people, including myself, actually believed it for quite a while.
Well, when it came out, I mean, it was reported as a legit thing. I remember first reading it and thinking, like, for those people who aren't familiar with it, the FSF was saying that they were unhappy with the agreement between Novell and Microsoft.
It was reported that the FSF said.
Well, and there was quotes from Evan Moglen saying, you know, basically saying that the FSF were unhappy with the agreement between Novell and Microsoft, and they were considering revoking Novell's rights to distribute certain chunks of free software.
Like they could.
And I remember reading it thinking... How in the fucking fuck's name can they do that?
Going back a bit, I remember thinking, well, actually the FSF doing something. That's got to be applauded. Anyway, you're right. I mean, how on earth could they do
that? How could they do that? I mean, and
who do they think they are?
Who do they think they are?
See, as someone who works as a professional within the free software world, I immediately dismiss that.
I think he works as an unprofessional, very much an unprofessional.
No, I mean, that's the thing I thought was interesting. Everyone went, for God's sake, they can't do that. But no one thought,
everyone believed
hang on, they wouldn't do that. They haven't done that. This article's obviously a lie. Everyone
well,
thought,
I did. I looked at the headline and thought, that's bullshit.
You know, I have a theory about this. I think a lot of people read it and thought, they can't do that. But I think most people feel like they don't know the licensing enough to go online and say they can't do that before some fucker shoots them down and says, actually, clause 16A of the GPL states they can do
that. The thing is, if you read the GPL, I mean, I don't normally read agreements, license agreements, because they're just unreadable, right? But the GPL isn't one of those agreements that's unreadable, and it's not actually that long, so you can actually read it and understand what...
But let's get to fundamentals here. It's not like the FSF is some core organisation that... produces
or indeed a relevant organisation
owns the copyright to all the stuff that's in SUSE, so or even the Linux kernel, because they were specifically talking about Linux, so yeah. I presume they're talking about the kernel. So it's not like they sit there and go, sorry Linus, we're going to have to stop the old novels having a go with your old kernel there. He just go, ah, fuck off.
But the thing is, aren't companies, they're quite allowed to resell Linux?
There's nothing stopping this. It was the agreement between Microsoft and Novell was legally binding. Their use and distribution of their operating system is entirely legal. There's nothing they could do at all to stop it.
So who started this
whole
rumour?
It's the patent covenant that causes the problem.
The thing I've heard, and admittedly I read it from some blog entry where a bloke mentioned it, so it might not be 100% correct.
Sounds reliable to me.
But apparently... it's just some dude at Reuters wrote this story up and didn't really know what he was talking about, wrote some lines that knew were going to get attention, and it was all
some
overblown,
kind of market employee.
All overblown by some faceless at Reuters.
Ah.
But it is interesting that people didn't go fucking crazy, you know.
But it's interesting that sites like ZDNet and Slashdot and everyone
well, you
basically
think of
picked
Reuters
up on
like
it
barely,
without thinking.
Nah, they pick up on all kinds
what?
Of shit, though, don't
Why
they?
Why is that interesting? In what way is that different to how it always is?
They always pick up on bullshit, don't they?
You know, I mean, just the thing that amazed me about this, every time any kind of even vaguely mainstream news thing writes anything to do with computers at all, I read it and think, that's not right. Either you've glossed over some subtleties there, or it's wrong, or whatever.
What's
so
new?
The point is that I'm forced to conclude that all the stuff where I don't have intimate knowledge of it is probably just as wrong.
Let me give
news
you
is all bollocks.
Let me give you an example from the non-IT world.
Is it dogs?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Is it BDSM? No, I've got to try and distance myself from this slightly. But
it's Launchpad, isn't it?
No,
it's goat pornography, I can tell.
Yes.
Is it being pissed on? Which, incidentally, I don't like, by the way.
Aid.
You haven't tried it, right?
I haven't tried it, so I don't actually know whether I like it or not, but...
Anyway.
Categorically,
we will clarify this, either we've already clarified it, we will clarify.
Have you ever spilt a cup of tea on yourself?
And enjoyed it?
Probably.
Did you like
not enjoyed it. No,
right, okay, well, that's
fine. Did you ever piss the bed when you were younger and thinking, oh no, I'm pissing the bed, but it feels so good?
No, did you?
Yeah, actually.
Really? Anyway, there's a company that's producing a new product, right? In this area, okay? And they got on the local news the other night. And on the local news, they says, oh, and over the past 3 years, they've doubled their turnover every year. And I thought, no, they didn't. Last year, they went bankrupt, because I know someone who got made redundant when they went bankrupt. And now it's just the same bloke using the same name.
Well, maybe the first year they sold one, and the second year they sold two, so they've doubled
their...
Second year
they sold one and then went bankrupt and then
next
sold another one
sold
when he reconstituted
four.
The company.
Yeah. But the point is that you're right. News is bullshit.
Particularly if you read it on the Register.
They
go to great lengths to make sure it's bullshit.
I mean, the thing is there was a saying, I can't remember who said it, but it's irrelevant because the sentiment remains
Dave Smith.
True. That was it, yeah. That unless it's something that somebody doesn't want you to read, it's not news. The rest of it is just fucking press releases.
Yes.
Good point, yeah.
And please print my press releases.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, the thing that amazed me is that everybody, everyone I saw writing about it, no one seemed to say, well, no, the FSF wouldn't do this.
That's because everyone's uncritical. People sit down, whether it's at the computers or the TV or the newspaper, and they just let information flow into their little brains without filtering it.
Their little brains,
So you don't think it's because people are prepared to believe that the FSF are capable of any zealotry act at all? You think they're prepared to believe that they're prepared to believe whatever they see written down?
My son was turned into a fish finger. People fucking believe that story.
Was he?
Not my son, he's all right.
The thing I find interesting is there's certain, particularly bloggers, right?
Aye.
And we get a lot of kind of what's going on from bloggers nowadays.
Aye.
You get people like Lewis Veer, right? And he writes a lot about law and the Free Software Foundation. And people like Matt Lee and Cory Doctorow. And
Matt Lee.
Mattel. Yeah. Maker of
his movies are cool.
fuck off. You get these people who write constantly about these issues, right?
Going on and on.
And sometimes they do go on a little bit, but these people write about these issues, and then when this Free Software Foundation thing kicked out, I didn't read anything about this in hardly any of these blogs. You know, from people, you'd have thought people would have
maybe
been...
Maybe we just slowed it up then.
Maybe everyone else just thought beard.
A lot of people read the story, but there wasn't much comment saying this couldn't happen.
How do you know how many people read it?
Well, it was syndicated a lot. I'm assuming, because it was something that people were talking about.
No, but I mean, my point remains that people just don't filter what they read. There's a lot said against media studies, but the one thing you can say for it
is it does teach you.
But it does teach you to.
Spoken like a true graduate in interactive multimedia communication.
Which isn't media studies.
Yeah, and I did media studies as well, and it is a pointless waste of fucking time.
Well, no.
But.
My degree is pointless as well, so carry on. Better than philosophical chemistry or whatever the fuck.
It does teach you to. To critically think about what you're consuming in the media. And we should do, whether it's IT media, whether it's fucking News4/Dot or whatever, we should be looking at it and going, well, whose agenda is being promoted
by
them printing this story? And generally, the stories that you see, whether it's on mainstream media or whatever, is just because someone wants you to hear about something you might be able to buy one day.
But we've known this for years, haven't we? I mean,
have we though? That's
spoken
the thing.
By a marketer, by the way.
I think most people know that. You know, the
if they did, then the news would be fucking.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a certain amount of liberal kind of hand wavy bullshit there. I mean, I agree.
No, it's not. People need to be more critical when they're consuming media.
I agree, but it's kind of like people need to be. There needs to be a balance between people.
There needs to be a balance between blindly.
No. Let me finish my point. The point I'm making is that. People do need to be critical about the media they consume.
Yes.
And you know, you're saying this, and you should, you know, as you're making the point here, but I don't believe that everybody all the time, even people who state this point, are critical all the time of the media that they consume. I think there's going to be a certain amount of stuff that people let slide, there's going to be a certain amount of stuff that people are critical
of. I think that's the thing. People intellectually know that a lot of the news is bollocks, but it's difficult to... I almost used the word internalised there. Sorry about that. it's difficult to believe it to the point where you actually do it. Rather than
internalise it. It's a useful word. Just
yeah, I mean, when you're...
It's a horrific word. When he said consume media earlier, which he must be
yes,
burned.
These are terms which have...
That's points of Jono, by the way.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah, you may criticise me that, but you've got a fucking sock on your microphone.
I have.
With a cow's face on it.
Because you lost it.
Because
pop shield.
The pop shield has been lost in this abyss of your house.
You know, LaGradio has become quite a popular show now, and we've got thousands of fans all around the world. Do you think we should buy some better mics? Because these are drum
mics.
And
I've been saying that for a long time.
I know. I think we
and
should.
And I've just cleared out the PayPal account into my own personal
account. I noticed that. Nice chunk of money going into Matthew Revelle's account.
I'm asking for this. We got an email. It says PayPal has now paid Matthew Revelle X amount of money, which is quite a lot of money, and I thought, bloody hell, really?
Why was this? Was it purely for laundering purposes?
No, because over the past year, it's lost about 3% of its value by just sitting in a PayPal account, so I'm going to set up a bank account and stick it in there.
All right.
Screws
when
a lot,
the Fed's not the door down. Send them to you, is that right?
No, they're called Soka. Right, in our society, in our community, we tend to be fairly judgmental about what goes on, right? So, here's the thing. Sometimes
it's just our community. No one else is.
No, it's true.
No one else is judgmental.
We're a bunch of bastards.
I'll be honest with you, there were more of them in our community than everyone else is.
So
what's the idea, Matt?
So, what would Eric do?
What would he do?
Would Eric approve? The idea is that sometimes open source software might be used for evil, bad things.
It could be used for good. It could be used for bad, right?
you got to weigh up like a big...
Is it good, is it bad?
What you're saying is sometimes open source software can be used for bad things, and Eric is a crazy bastard. How do these two things kind of fit together?
No, Eric in particular. Just an Eric. And would he approve? What would Eric do? So... We're going to go around the room and each come up with as many stupid, evil ideas for the use of open source and suggest whether Eric would use it. And maybe we'll discuss
whether it's
too,
a good use of open source or not.
Can I go first?
Go for it.
Okay. If open source was used on a missile launching system...
Right.
You're bastard.
Would Eric approve?
Would Eric approve of this?
Yes.
I think yes, depending on where it's pointing.
Yeah,
I think that's crucial to the conversation.
He's not going to like certain countries.
He's not averse to a bit of death and destruction as long as it's not the United States of America.
America, goddammit, I'm so proud.
Cool, okay.
Sacklarius.
Oh, we're going now. We're going clockwise. Ack, no, you're next.
Oh, it's my go, is it?
Apparently.
Sorry, but he went from him to me.
Oh, sorry. I assumed
that it was going back round.
I'll do it if you want.
Go back.
All right, okay, you've got a factory, right? And it's not a factory, it's a slaughterhouse. And
that's both of my ideas you've just stolen.
We've not said about the things. Would Eric approve?
All right. Well, yes, he would. We said yes.
No, me and you said yes. Those two didn't have an answer.
All right, okay. Come on.
Well, clearly, obviously, he would.
He would approve.
Okay. <let's laughs>
Okay.
Follow your own segment, please.
You've got a factory then, right?
Right.
And it's not a slaughterhouse, it's a factory.
It's a...
Right?
Okay.
It's a big one. And,
is that relevant?
They use it open source. A long time ago, they used to use Commodore VIC-20s to power production lines. Now they're using PCs, right?
This is a long time ago.
No, not that long. Now they're using Linux PCs to power the production line. But the thing is, what they're making is socks, right? But they're socks
the
that
evil
are,
bastards!
They're socks that are labelled wrongly so they can get away with using less cotton in them, and they're very slightly smaller than they should be, and they're crippling people when they wear them.
Is that the best you can come up with?
Who the bloody hell gets crippled by a sock that's a bit too tight?
I don't know, but
you've got a factory, right? You've got this factory producing inferior goods.
Yes,
and all you can pick is fucking socks.
Would he approve?
He would approve. He would.
Okay, fine.
I don't think Eric proves of inferior sock quality.
No, he's very much a believer in socks being, you know, the birthright of all true Americans.
Right, okay, fine.
It's a proud American tradition.
Fine.
Quality sock making.
So, in a slaughterhouse, let's say there's a machine that
vegetarian speaks.
Yeah, that dispatches poor little cows, and there's a machine, and it used to run closed source software as it dispatched them, but now it's been upgraded, and it's now running open source software.
So get install cow fuck, right?
And they run it. And
not cow say.
It actually increases the production. And more cows get dispatched. And is that a good use of open source? So would he approve? I don't know.
Yes.
Well, I think he's a bit of a steak eater, so he's
a meat eating motherfucker, yeah. Isn't he?
So I think
he'd
approve. No tree hugger, is he?
he ain't no tree hugger.
He'd approve, yeah?
I think he'd approve. I think he'd, mm-hmm. he'd definitely approve.
Really? He's approving everything at the minute.
He is.
He's Mr. Congeniality.
No, he isn't. He wouldn't approve of inferior sock quality. Yeah.
No, wouldn't he?
No. Disapproves dramatically of inferior sock quality.
It's like to blow up nations and trying to kill animals.
No, yeah.
But socks. No way.
Hell no. That does sum up a certain sort of person though, doesn't it?
I mean, next on the agenda.
No, no one in particular. But it does, doesn't it? I mean,
Jack, think of an evil use for open source software.
Oh, God, it's my go, isn't it?
Saquarius.
Yeah. Ah, imagine you were the machine that dropped napalm on innocent villagers.
Well, considering napalm's rarely going to be pointed towards the US, I should guess he would approve. The
thing is though, is anyone truly innocent?
I'm pretty sure the villagers are innocent.
I just heard
the
little girl today.
Villagers.
That philosophical question.
I bet they've never trodden on that. Yeah.
So oh, I see. And the bigger picture thing.
Yeah. Is anyone really innocent?
No.
So
everyone deserves napalm.
Everyone deserves being napalmed then, right?
Well,
okay.
Look, the weeds in my front garden really piss me off.
All right, yeah. So it's like one year you didn't kiss your nan because she's got a beard. So therefore you
and
have
napalm. And now
napalm.
I'm just saying it's very good at getting rid of weeds, all right?
What's weeds code name for?
No, it's not. Napalm is a vegetation.
The working
clearance.
I don't believe it is, mate. I think the people of Vietnam may disagree.
No, but its original intention was rapid deforestation.
Certainly does that.
Anyway.
It certainly was not. It was. No, it wasn't. Agent Orange's original intention was rapid deforestation. Napalm has never been for anything other than dropping on people and burning them alive.
I think the rapid deforestation is a byproduct, actually.
Well, I'll have some Agent Orange then. I'm sick of the weeds in my front garden. All right.
You're a fucking angry gardener, aren't you?
Next, Jono, another evil use for open source software.
I don't have an evil use.
Really?
I have one possible evil use.
Okay. Yeah.
Imagine a machine was invented.
for what?
No, let's not imagine that machine was invented.
This machine is intended...
Who did invent that machine, though?
Apparently, Jono.
This machine is intended for the violent anal rape of donkeys, okay?
No, not okay.
Would Eric approve of this machine? Because it's not...
Are you saying, oh, would he prefer
open
to run closed source software?
This machine's running Linspire. It's kind of like...
Click and fun.
Fucking run. This machine is running open source software. Would Eric approve it? Because it's obviously intended for... Horrific acts. I mean, your slaughtering example.
Yeah.
That's intended to make
food for
people.
Actual real world thing, isn't it?
This is insane donkey abuse.
Okay.
Would he approve?
I don't think he would approve.
No.
I don't think he likes the anal.
No discrimination against fields of endeavour, though. Against the open source definition, if you were to disagree.
So Ack would approve.
We're not asking about me.
I've had a text message from Eric Raymond.
I suppose you've got to be amoral on it, haven't you? You can't take any position on it.
Have you, though?
Well, if you can't distinguish between fields of endeavour...
Who says?
The open source
definition.
Ah.
Next question.
I think look over there.
If we're talking about this, right? I think there's two levels here,
okay,
right?
Okay, right.
Two. That's a surprise.
Well, personally, one's got a really fat bloke at the end of
this
it.
This is my view, is that I don't mind open source being used anywhere, in any situation.
You don't mind, so
because software, I believe in free software, but... Deciding whether something should happen is a separate moral issue. So I disagree with the violent anal rape of donkeys. I disagree with...
But if someone's going to do it anyway, they might as well use open source software, right?
The software makes no difference to me, whatever. That's a different issue to whether that act should happen.
Well, why is there a difference between intercontinental ballistic missiles and the computer on your desktop, then?
What I'm saying is that if we're talking about open source being used for bad things... I couldn't care less would you just fucking stop talking?
Sorry. I've got sprint flu.
Isn't it Matt's turn anyway? Are we going around quick
fire?
Yeah,
let's go. Let's quick fire. We don't want to keep it, you know. What?
Right. You've got...
Nothing.
You've got AIDS, did you say?
No.
You've got my what?
You've got some terrorists. And they're going to release Ebola over the place.
Ebola.
Right.
Is it going to embolden them?
Yeah.
Right.
And they're using open infection API.
Wow.
Would he approve?
I think he kind of would, you know? I think he would.
I think not.
It depends on the terrorist means. Fuck. We are really quite dramatically slandering his character.
We're not slandering anyone. It's just
Eric in general.
We're not, yeah. There's no particular Eric.
Okay.
Right, if you could design, if there was a piece of software that helped you clear forests quicker, right? So you know how they're clearing forests to
make way for burgers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if there was some open source software that increased,
boil that entire market segment down into one fucking sentence.
Well, that pretty much
so
is.
They chop down sentence, chop down forests to make room for burgers. That's all they
pretty
do.
Much do.
They do. They set up.
They pretty much do
until the soil gets washed away.
Sorry, just before you continue, yeah. Have you heard this lie about 100% beef?
What, that they trademarked it?
Yeah, so. Apparently McDonald's.
Don't even start me on McDonald's.
Apparently McDonald's called their herd 100% beef. So they can say that they've got 100%
nah,
beef.
Nah, that's bullshit.
Yeah. Is
that
it bullshit?
I'll tell you what's bullshit. Not bullshit. Just going on a bit of a side tangent here.
It's amazing in okay. McGregor, isn't it?
You know, don't get how litigious some big companies are.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. Fucking bite me.
I give right. a shit!
Well, this is me, Aid Bradshaw, saying this then. So, I went to get myself an Egg McMuffin one morning recently, right? You know how you can get sausage Egg McMuffin, and you can get a bacon Egg McMuffin, and you can get an Egg McMuffin, right? The first two are £1.49, and the last one, the egg muffin, is 99p, right?
Right.
I went to get myself an egg McMuffin, right? You know what they told me? That'd be £1.49, please.
And did you complain?
And I said, why is that then? She goes, because we don't sell egg McMuffins anymore. So what we have to do is charge you for a sausage and egg McMuffin,
and then throw the sausage
not
away.
Put the sausage in. So I'm like, so you're going to charge me 49p extra for the meat that you're not going to put in it? And she's like, yeah. So fuck you, McDonald's. Fuck you and your fucking meat putting in, not putting in 49p surcharge. Fuck you.
I can't believe they charge you to not put the meat
it's
in.
It's bollocks, isn't it?
Well,
I wish my
I said don't forget they're litigious.
Oh yeah, fuck them.
Oh, no, anyway, imagine. No, I'd say fuck them as well.
No, did you not get my clever subtle joke?
Oh, right.
Anyway, imagine that a company was clearing forests and actually.
Should we call it McDonald's for the sake of argument?
Let's not call it McDonald's. Let people jump to their own conclusions.
We got into you.
Oh, yeah, thank you for interrupting that segment. Let's say the use of open source software means they can clean 20% more forests a day.
Okay.
Would Eric approve? Would he approve of that?
I think he'd approve of that.
Yeah. Really?
Fuck Eric.
You know, well, he's American, so they don't really care about the environment.
I don't know if he's American. Who is this guy that we're talking about?
Well, let's assume Eric's American about Eric.
Okay.
Matt, lean forward and actually be asked to speak into the mic is what Jono was trying to mime at you.
Unlike Ack, who Ack decided to bring in this a chair from our sunroom.
He's sitting on Alan. Alan Wicker.
Any more for any more?
No, it's a shit-eyed.
No, I think that'll do.
That'll do for now, then.
I think we need to interview the dude.
Right.
Okay, so we've got Wouter van Heist, who is one of the coders on the Bazaar project. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm quite interested in Bazaar.
Oh, really?
What
yeah,
a shock.
So,
what a coincidence.
No, seriously, though. I mean, I've just come back from the Bazaar sprint in Amsterdam. And,
okay.
Fancy that.
And no bullshit. I am actually quite interested in it now, because it's... I actually grew to understand what makes it special. So
it is very cool.
I wanted to kind of get across to everyone on the Lug Radio audience, because it is actually something... It is something that's worth knowing about. So, Wouter, can you tell us, give us a brief overview of what Bazaar is?
Bazaar is a versioning control system started by Martin Poole in early 2005. It's written in Python. Duh. And it tries to be a friendly system that everyone in the open source community will love to use. It focused on getting the model correct first.
Right.
And after that, we're now getting around to doing some speed improvements, which was also part of the sprint. Robert and I and Vincent worked on the smart server a bit, and I think that's shaping up nicely.
Cool. So, why not just use Subversion?
Subversion is a centralized system, and it has worked for a couple of years nicely, but... If you use a decentralized system, you have more freedom. There's the obvious advantage of being able to work offline.
Yeah.
Say you're in a train or in a plane,
as
the standard example goes. You're able to just use your tool fully. You can do commits, you can do diffing, log of the history, make a new branch, do some feature work there, etc. Something I really like about decentralized systems like Bazaar and Mercurial and Git is that you don't have second-class citizens when it comes to the versioning control system.
Right.
Yeah. Anyone can just branch off, work on it, and when they're done, submit a branch for review to the core developers.
Ah, okay.
So the main branch where releases get made from is not special in a versioning control sense. It's only policy from, well, I'm Linus, so my tree is where the releases are made from.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I'm a Subversion sort of person, and you've got to do releases out of the repository. We use Subversion for Jacosha, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But for that kind of thing, I mean, Jacosha's only got a few developers on it.
Mm-hmm.
So would there be any real benefit to us using a distributed system like Bazaar or Mercurial or Codeville or whatever?
For the developers themselves, I find it much easier to make just a quick branch. Say I'm doing someone submits a bug, and I say, well, I'll just branch off specifically for that bug, fix it in there. When it's done, merge it back in the main tree. And that's what the developers themselves might find very liberating. Instead of in CVS, you say, well, you can do tags and branches, but it's a sort of a headache to actually merge them back together again.
Yes. Mm. Yes,
you've done
it is.
That before?
Yes.
But people who are not currently developers on Jacosha might actually want to contribute, but say, well, the would you say Drempel in Dutch? The threshold is too high to contribute.
Yeah, I understand that absolutely.
You have to give people write access to SVN, or just say, well, submit a patch and we'll review it and merge it. And with a decentralized system, they can just branch off themselves, do the commits, make multiple commits. It's easier to review for you guys. And you can say, well, I like this commit, but not that one, or, yeah.
Cool, absolutely. There's a lot of acceptance of Bazaar inside the Ubuntu project. But are there... lots of projects, lots of developers who aren't involved with Ubuntu using Bazaar?
I'm not really an Ubuntu person, but I see some...
Aren't you? Oh, okay, then you.
Good boy.
Well, we see some Ubuntu people come by the IRC channel and ask questions. But there are also other people outside. You may know Bitlebee, the IRC to instant messaging gateway. That's using Bazaar.
Mm, Drupal.
ControlSoft, it's a RC proxy. There are other users outside of the Ubuntu community.
Okay.
The one thing that I get the impression a lot of people get confused at with Bazaar is that it doesn't fit with a lot of people's brains if they're using things like CVS and Subversion, because the idea is that you can branch stuff completely and you can merge it all back in, and that works to a point with CVS and Subversion, but it's much more intrinsic in Bazaar. How are you guys trying to show people that Bazaar is the right way of doing things and trying to let people kind of understand these concepts?
For people who want to use a centralized workflow, Bazaar also supports that, just like Subversion. You have a branch on a central system and you do a checkout. And when you commit on your local branch, it goes immediately to the server. And
right. You
do a Bazaar update and you get the commits from other people also working on a branch. So it supports doing centralized development just like you used to.
But
then you can branch off it in a decentralized way and start using it. So you don't have to immediately switch over to a fully decentralized workflow.
But what is the Bazaar team trying to do to get these concepts over to people? Imagine, as an example, I'm involved in the Jacosha project as well. We use Subversion. As a developer involved with Subversion, what kind of things can the Bazaar project say to me that makes me want to move to Bazaar? What are you doing to kind of move people over?
I'm not personally really moving people over, but there's a Bazaar SVN plugin which makes it... If some people in your community want to use Bazaar, they can use the Bazaar SVN plugin to work against your SVN repository.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Which makes it easier to... piecewise switch people over.
That's very clever.
Would you say that the learning curve for Bazaar is less than the learning curve for SVN? Because, I mean, I don't use repositories that much, so is it easier to learn Bazaar than it is to learn SVN, I guess, is the question.
Bazaar aims to be really user-friendly, and if it's not as easy to use as SVN or easier, then we consider that a bug.
Okay.
Cool.
Bug one.
Bug number one, not as good as Subversion, so you fix it immediately. what makes you excited about it?
Right now it's really the user community, the developer and user community is really nice. And when I started 2 years ago, I was looking for a decentralized system. I had been using Subversion and CVS for years. And a friend of mine introduced me to Bazaar, and it was written in Python, so I was immediately able to submit patches and say, well, I'm missing this from Subversion.
Yeah.
It was the something to give a file with a commit message when you're committing instead of typing the message on the command line or in the editor.
Hmm.
It was really easy to get started developing.
Cool.
So that's what really won me over.
So the whole point of Bazaar is that it should be flexible and work in a way that developers love to use. And I mean, would you say that when you see people using it, they understand the whole point behind it, or do you think it's something that's difficult for people to learn about?
What we tend to see is that people are really used to certain workflows and have some trouble getting used to something else. Some people come from Arc, who immediately, they're used to decentralized stuff.
Yeah.
Other people need a bit more nudging to get used to it. But it really depends on what you've done before Bazaar.
Yeah. But, okay, cool. Although, I mean, obviously, Bazaar does support different workflows, so that's cool. But I'll stop doing my job now. all right, well, thank you very much, Valter.
Yeah,
it's been good
thank
talking
you.
To you. And
keep up the good work.
Is there anything else?
Is there anything else you want to add or anything?
What's the URL?
URL, bazaar-vcs.org.
Awesome.
Or you can speak to M. Ravel in #bzr on ilc.freenode.net. All right, well, thank you very much, Valter. Good luck with the older beating people up. And we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye.
Cheers, bye.
Ciao.
Recently, I've misappropriately told a friend to shut the fuck up.
Accidentally.
Right. Which friend was this?
A Balchor.
Is he still a friend?
I assume so.
Okay.
He's interrupted me, so he deserved the comedy SCFU. Anyway.
And listeners, you'll never hear this.
So, recently...
Been banished from history.
I've been using... Oh, this is thrilling. Recently, I've been using Google Docs, which is rightly.com.
Changing your voice isn't going to make it any more exciting.
And Google Spreadsheets.
Yeah, Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets.
That's the one, yeah. Google Docs is good because it lets you basically have a text editor with bells and whistles.
Yeah.
Anywhere you are.
Wow. Like
Google Spreadsheets is good. No, easier than a fucking wiki, mate.
Okay.
There's none of this bloody... apostrophe. Oh, it's bold now. Apostrophe. It's not anymore.
It was merely a glib comment.
Yeah, well, shut
the fuck up. Okay.
So, So, right. So.
Are you tired, Matt?
No, I'm not.
Matt's starting to fade, isn't he?
Google Docs, right, is good because it lets me edit stuff. So,
that's a really good reason to use.
As I've publicised before, I'm trying to write a novel at the moment, and I also do bits of writing for my job, surprisingly. And when I'm maybe even swapping between computers or going to another country or whatever that I have to do in the course of my work, it's good to be able to go into Firefox and just have my documents there.
Yes.
Similarly with spreadsheets. Sometimes I have to create spreadsheets for my job where I just list shit. And to share it with a colleague who is on the other side of the world is much easier to give them a URL, which is an HTML output of the spreadsheet, than email them a bloody open office document.
We're getting dangerously close to the point of this segment.
So, the whole thing is... I'm using these things quite a lot, and then I sort of sat down and thought, but hang on a minute, shouldn't I be using open source software? And then I thought, well, no, because it's a hell of a lot easier
to use
this Web 2.0 stuff, right, than it is to sit down with an oldie worldy application where I have to then save things on my disk and email them to people and all this.
Yeah.
So
And the point being that...
The point being,
that web applications aren't open source.
They're not open source, but does it matter? And should we be concentrating on, as a community, should we be concentrating on building web 2.0 open source applications, all of that?
Open source versions of those web apps.
Yeah. Or should we be encouraging Google to open them, or what? Or does it not matter? Because obviously, you know, it doesn't matter that web applications are sometimes not available as open source. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I agree, because I'm a pragmatist, unlike some members of this team.
Aid looks at Ack.
He didn't even have the energy to do that. He sort of looked left.
We all know who we're talking about.
I can't see Ack's face 100% because he's staring through this.
I can definitely see the use.
Cow's face in the end.
I can definitely see the use of web apps and how they're easier in some... I mean, I don't think they're ever going to replace the full-on word processor. They'll come pretty close, but the extra things that it gives you is the ability to take your documents around with you or access them anywhere.
There seem to be a couple of issues. One is, do they match desktop client equivalents?
Which
personally I don't think they do.
Well, they're moving more towards it each time.
It really depends on what you're doing as well.
But that doesn't matter.
If you're making notes, for example, I mean, the amount of times I've made notes and I've just made them on, I remember when I used to use Yahoo Mail, I'd just make them in the little notepad thing there. And that was really useful. But I wouldn't want to do... You wouldn't want to do a parish newsletter, which is the
example. Have you actually tried using Google Docs?
Yes.
Yes.
And what did you feel that it fell down on? That Abbey Word say can't, can do, that it can't.
I, to be honest with you, I've used it a bit. I've not used it a lot.
That's what I thought.
I've used it.
It's not a glorified notepad. But I mean, in the same, I wouldn't call Abbey Word a glorified text editor.
But
in the same way, I wouldn't call Google Docs or any one of the half a dozen other online word processor applications.
But
they're proper word processors.
Yeah.
Now you see that's why I asked.
They're not just publishers though, are they? The thing is, people expect more like DTP stuff from web press all the time. And so I was using OpenOffice Writer over the past couple of days to produce a brochure.
Yeah.
It's a fucking nightmare. But it's not a desktop publishing system. Yeah. It's a word processor.
I mean, if you're writing letters and if you're writing reports and things like that, it will be perfectly fine. If you're basically using different sized fonts and making things into sections and putting page numbers on there, then yes, I agree with you. The thing is that I think I don't think web applications feel responsive and don't feel like desktop applications, which is one reason why I don't like them as much. And the other thing is that there's been so many situations where something starts out as a fairly simple project, a fairly simple document, then turns into a much more complex document.
Yeah.
And that's the other concern I have. But the second issue, of course, is, you know, should we be making open source equivalents and the rest of it? Which, of course, we should.
Talking generally about
all of us agree on that one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Talking generally about the quality of them, I mean, Google Docs, to me, seems responsive, seems great, and it does everything I need to write. to write what I would have used something like LocoScript for on the PCW or Wordworth on the Amiga years ago.
Oh, Wordworth, I remember that.
You know, just basically the quality stuff that you would have used a word processor for years ago, right?
Yeah.
Not desktop publishing stuff. Google Spreadsheets, though, is good as a spreadsheet if you're just doing what most people do with spreadsheets. But it's got really slow recently. But anyway, so that's the quality issue. But The thing that interests me is we all say, oh, it's great, we should be doing them. But who's
said that? Well, three of us did.
Well, you sorry, might carry on. But who's going to produce these open source web applications? Because you can see... hang on a second. Let me just finish the point. You can see why people would make open source desktop applications or server applications, because they produce it and then someone else worries about running it on their hardware. But if you're creating these Web 2.0 applications, then you're not just writing a bit of software. You've almost got to provide a service as well. And yes, fair enough. Okay, anyone could set up these, a word processor on their own server. But that's not really the way they work, is it? And that's not the way they're working out.
But this is like the argument that people have had in the discussion about Launchpad, is that there's not many open source centralized services.
Mm.
Like, there's no reason why somebody couldn't code an equivalent to Launchpad, and there are equivalents.
What's that? Launchpad?
Yeah.
Where could I find out more about that? Launchpad.
Don't look at me. Launchpad boy.
I didn't raise it, but I'd argue that there aren't equivalents.
But you know, vague kind of like development platform kind of equivalence. I know there's not a direct equivalent, but that's not my point.
There is kind of an equivalent to like Google Docs, because Zimbra does Docs now, and it does Word, and it does Spreadsheet.
But so the point,
you
yeah,
get
but
open source, and it's all open source.
But there are half a dozen different online word processor, roughly Abbey Word equivalents.
But I'm talking about a centralised service. Okay. I mean, I'm talking about, yeah, you can install your own Zimbra, definitely. Yeah. And you can install your own GeForge and things like that. But part of what Matt seems to be talking about is not only the code being open source, but it being kind of used as a centralised service. So I'd like to go to something like Google Docs. If I was I personally don't get on particularly well with web applications like that. That's just me. But if I was somebody, it would be nice to go to a service like that that was running on open source software.
I tell you what, my point isn't that you would have to. I just think that people maybe feel that if you produce something like that, then there is more of an obligation to start thinking about more about how you deliver it. Whereas with normal open source software, you produce it and then someone else probably packages it for a distro,
yeah,
and then someone else runs it on their hardware. So I don't know. You're the Web 2.0 guy, Stuart. I mean, how do you feel about it? What do you reckon? Is there anything stopping people doing this?
Like you say, the big distinction is the advantage with web applications, the massive, unbelievable advantage is there is no deployment. Mm. None. Mm. You walk up to any computer.
Well, there's the server deployment.
And it'll work. No, hang on. okay. From the point of view of having, being the application provider, right, or application user, probably a better example, yeah, you don't have to have that software. You walk up to anyone's computer anywhere, one at work, one at home, one in a cyber cafe, one at your mate's house, your PDA, whatever, and your application's just there. All you've got to do is remember a URL for it, which is jolly, jolly, jolly handy. But the problem with it is that someone's got to be running it. If you made it so, if Google open sourced Google Docs, if it was open source but it was Writely, for example, and Google were just running an instance of the server, and if you wanted to, you could get it and install it yourself, then you'd have just the same problems as you would do installing it on your desktop PC, apart from the fact that it's harder, because installing software on servers is harder than it is installing them on your local machine. Your local machine, you've got a GUI, you've got handy ways of dealing with this kind of thing. If you're installing software on a server rather than using someone else's server hosting, which most people are not. Most people are not running their own server.
Yeah, sure.
Even if they are, it's all still quite command line based or based through a control panel or something like that.
But you can go to a vendor and get like Zimbra. Manage Zimbra installs and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, absolutely.
You're on fucking commission.
And there's no.
It's the only open source doc, Word, Google type thing that I can think of.
Yeah, there's no reason why people couldn't deploy. Take Ajax Write, for example, Michael Robertson's online word processor thing, which might be open source, I'm not sure. But take that. People could do hosted versions of it in the same way they do hosted versions of TextPattern or WordPress.
WordPress is a great example.
Now, yeah. I mean, WordPress is open source software, and you can go and buy WordPress hosting off somebody. Absolutely. And there's no reason why applications like this couldn't exist in that kind of way. Run your own one or don't. But at that point, it becomes a straight... If you're going to think about, do I install it myself, or do I use a remote hosted one, or do I use a desktop application... The choice between install myself my own one on the server and use it as a web application or run a desktop application becomes a straight choice down to features, really.
You look at it,
you say which starts up faster, which does the stuff I need to do. And web applications there, at that point you take away the big reason why web applications are good.
It's that
you can just walk up to any computer and use them. You don't have to worry about deployment or
That's the major benefit, isn't it?
But I think I'm doing a talk about this at SkyCon.
I think that's a benefit.
Yeah. And I thought it was in Jackfield.
I think it makes it easier to collaborate on things as well. Easy to share amongst people.
I think so. Sorry, just going back a little bit to the discussion of desktop applications versus web applications. I've just thought of an analogy which I think works because one of the benefits, of course, of web applications is that your data is online, so you can access it from any computer. And if you travel a lot or if you move between office and home, that's obviously really beneficial. Yeah. But to me, it's a bit like electronic drums versus real drums. I own an electronic drum kit, right? And it does all of the basic things that a normal drum kit will do. And this is an expensive electronic drum kit, so it's a lot more responsive than a cheaper electronic drum kit. But no matter how much I use it, it still doesn't feel like a proper drum kit. It's still the little It's the nuances in how I use that kit. Things like the cymbals don't feel the same. The responsiveness of the drums doesn't feel the same. And that's kind of, to me, how web applications feel that are trying to mimic desktop applications.
I think that's why Apple's asking if you'd use one recently.
Here's honestly, a massively important point, though. You've got an electronic drum kit. Why don't you get rid of it and get a real drum kit? The answer is, miking it up's a pain in the ass.
Not.
You can't make it be different drums.
No,
it's too
it's
big.
Not. The reason why I've got an electronic drum kit is because I've got neighbours. If I lived in a house and didn't have neighbours next to me, I'd have a real drum kit within 2 seconds. I'd be happy to mic it
all. Still a reason.
Okay, so in the same way, if the web was instantly responsive, you'd use web applications.
Sure, and I'm not denying the fact that there's benefits to the electronic drum kit. I'm not denying the fact there's benefits to the web. I've stated that. The point is that it still doesn't feel like the experience of using that thing doesn't feel like the experience of using the original thing. You know, a desktop application feels much more... It feels much... This is going to sound ridiculous. It feels more interaction-rich. I know that sounds shit.
See, I disagree, because if you look at... Again, I'm going to come back to Zimbra, but, I mean, there are things in Zimbra where, like, if you open a mail, you hover over a telephone number, and it'll hook straight into your Asterisk server and dial it. You know, you can't get that from, like, thick client stuff at the moment.
Yeah. And there's going to be benefits both ways. I mean, at a service level, you've got that kind of shit.
Sort of. That's because they've got specific integration. In the same way, if you get emails, if you've got a Gmail account, and someone emails you a Word document, there's now at the bottom of the email, if you go and look at it in Gmail, opening Google Docs.
Oh, is it?
And you click on that, and it opens it in Google Docs. So it doesn't show you some noddy cut down HTML version with loads of stuff missing and a big banner at the top saying images don't work. By the way, ho ho ho. And you can actually open it up in Google Docs, and it really is the document. You can edit it. You can work with it, you can save it, mail it to people, whatever. And that kind of integration's great. But that only works because Google run Gmail and because Google run Google Docs and they're fair to put the integration.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be a lot harder.
Zimbra don't run Asterisk.
No, but they've put the effort in to do that individual combination.
There are
how does it know where your Asterisk server is?
But that's what I'm saying. There are benefits from using a web application over a thick client.
That's just because the Zimbra people have decided to put Asterisk integration. That's not a benefit of it being a web app. There's no reason why a thick client application can do exactly the same thing.
It's just not
an inherent property of the web. They just haven't done it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, what can a web application do that a desktop application can't? Or can't do easily? And what can a desktop application do that a web application can't? There are some things you can do on the desktop you cannot yet do on the web.
Yeah.
Or not easily, at least. One obvious example to me is something like Jacosha. That would be a lot harder to do because multimedia stuff's a lot harder on the web and the latency's a lot more of a problem. You'd end up having to rewrite 3/4 of it in Flash. Stuff that generally deals with text, like spreadsheets, like web processors, that kind of thing, can move online. But 2 years ago, that would have been a lot more difficult to move online.
And things
are gradually moving towards
it depends on the thing, doesn't it? So, for example, email. Email is, I use Gmail for my personal email. And I use Evolution for my work email, and I'm happy with both. Both email works fine for me as web application.
Evolution sucks, doesn't it?
Email works fine for me as web application, but word processing for me personally doesn't work fine. So there's obviously a distinction between different types of things, and that's still largely text based.
The thing that I think's really interesting about this is the web app development community are one of the big target areas is trying to convince people to stop using desktop applications for in particular classes.
Are these
only
Web 20
at the
people,
moment.
Yeah.
Oh fucking hell.
Yeah, Web 20 people. they're looking to say let's convince people that they should be using their web doing their web processing online, doing their spreadsheeting online, doing their to-do lists online, all this kind of thing, doing their project planning online, build web applications to do these things. But so they are trying to identify things that people are currently doing on the desktop and moving them to the web. But the desktop people aren't trying to identify what the web does well and make that better available on the desktop. It's not going the other way. So the flow of people has got to be from desktop to web. And I really want to see the desktop fight back.
I completely agree.
One big thing that we haven't spoken about at all, and I don't want to get into it too far, is that web applications are, in my opinion, and I'm a web guy, easier to develop. It's a lot easier to deploy a web app. I mean, easier to develop.
Right.
Is what I meant to say. A lot of people are going to disagree with me here and say JavaScript's a pain in the arse and shut up. And
yeah, I'm 100% with you on that.
But I mean, if you look at, one of the things I've seen Louis Veer talk about, argue about him with Guardec, was the idea of GNOME on Rails. The fact that you can start up a Rails app and just say, give me a Rails app, one command, and you get a Rails application. All the structure's there. You can't do that with GNOME. There's no way of just saying punch a button and give me a GNOME app that doesn't do anything.
There
and
is then
just slot
like
in the bits I want. There are not.
I think. Not that thing that the PyGDK guys have developed.
The Sandino's thing.
The Quick or what's it called? Ducky or fucking Wiki or Quickie or something. Quirky.
Kiwi.
Kiwi. that's the same kind of
Johan Dahlin people.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's
async people.
There's nothing anywhere near as complete as people
into Rails. And that's the kind of thing that I want to see the desktop looking at why people decide to build or use web applications and try and make desktop apps do that.
Well, did you have a point here?
I had a question that's a bit different from what you're talking about there. But you mentioned that JavaScript is a pain in the ass. Some people see it as.
Yeah.
So the problem I've got. Or I see, is that people have, there is an installed browser base, and you cannot guarantee that someone will be using a browser or other or whatever. And now we've got fairly good compatibility between the various versions of ECMAScript running on the installed browser base.
Yeah.
So Google Docs will work if you're using Internet Explorer or Opera or Firefox. But
that's not because there's fairly good compatibility. It's because they're prepared to put the work in to make sure it works in lots of places. Things like Google Docs are not good examples here, because if you don't have JavaScript turned on, they are fucking useless to you.
Well, fair enough.
There should be progressive enhancement, and there is not. All the Google apps are just like, if you've got no JavaScript, tough shit, use this noddy cut-down bollocks version of our application.
How would you do a web app without JavaScript?
CSS.
You, right, are the reason why the web's shit. You on your
own. I'm with Matt.
No, sorry, how would you have a word processor without JavScript running on your browser?
You could do it all server-side, but it wouldn't...
But without JavScript?
It's perfectly doable without JavaScript. It just wouldn't feel the same experience.
Oh, you mean so you'd put, basically, you'd put...
You can't make...
put HTML code in to mark up your stuff.
No.
Press save and it goes
to the... functionality that you... If you could create something like that with a server-side language such as PHP... And not rely on any JavaScript. But
how? Because otherwise, every time you press a button, you would have to then refresh the page or click submit.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm saying it would be shitter.
It would be unusable.
It would not be.
It depends on the application.
The point I'm trying to illustrate here is you're prepared to say, right, okay, anyone who's not using one of the top four browsers, the latest versions. Fuck you.
Yep.
No web apps.
I'm prepared
for you.
To say that.
I think it's fair to say that a requirement for web browsers is to have JavaScript to fucking.
You are putting words in my mouth. What I was actually trying to say was, what happens if we want to have JavaScript 3 or whatever, which I think has been worked on or whatever. I mean,
JavaScript 2.
I thought 2 was already around. Whatever. I don't give a shit. But the point is, if you want to make a better JavaScript or anything like that, then you have to wait for everyone to upgrade their browser or have a sufficiently well-installed browser base to
wait for Microsoft
bother
to do,
having a web application that uses those, don't you?
You absolutely do not. That's the point. That's exactly the point I'm trying to illustrate here. That's what progressive enhancement's all about.
Right.
You start off with a base with no JavaScript stuff at all, and yeah, it's a bit rubbish, but it means that people who don't have JavaScript turned on because their firm blocks it, or they don't have JavaScript stuff turned on because they're blind, or they don't have JavaScript stuff turned on because they're in Lynx or on a mobile phone browser or on their BlackBerry, can still use your application even if it's a bit suboptimal, rather than just saying no fucking no document editing for
but
you.
Surely just fuck them, right?
And then you gradually increase it as the browser, the platform they're working on, becomes more capable.
I just don't understand.
You slot more and more stuff in.
I just don't. Forgive me. I know that you're seeing this as some great assault on the disadvantaged browser users of the world, but I just don't understand how you could have, to take the Google Docs example, how you could have Google Docs without it just being a form.
A form with a submit button.
Take a slightly more appropriate example then. Until Gmail and Ajax stuff came along, and people started using JavaScript a lot, do you think that no one should have used webmail? Was that totally unusable?
That's a shit example.
I'm specifically talking about Google Docs.
Because to me, it appears to do things
that you couldn't do without JavaScript.
What things?
For example, being able to bold up text and do bullet points and automatic format and stuff like that.
Without having to reload the page.
Which is what WordPress does.
That's not what you said. You said you couldn't do it. Not you could do it, but it would be, I believe it would be too slow for me to use.
All right, you can't do it practically in a way that makes sense to ordinary human beings. Not people who are having some kind of fucking ethical discussion about whether you should cut out people using ZX81s.
You don't act sighs with disbelief.
Act does sigh with disbelief. Because you're prepared to basically go 25% of the audience, fuck them because they're too stupid.
25%?
No, I'm not. Yes. What I'm saying is that. Alright, so should we then limit the next version of OpenOffice so it'll work perfectly on Zilog Z80s?
That's the difference between desktop applications and web applications.
Only in the minds of some people.
Do you think?
Admittedly, the people who are running the show. But
to be fair, what you're accusing
and
Matt,
the people who you're prepared to cut out.
Hang on, Matt. No. To be fair, you're accusing Matt of basically saying fuck you to a certain proportion of browser users. But in Matt's defence, you're unwilling for web developers to make a fucking decision about which audience they want. And if we're going to move forward, sometimes we've got to lock out certain people because it's called fucking technological progress, right? So there's going to be some people. Yeah, theoretically, all software should work for everybody in every situation, but that just isn't the fucking case for a lot of people and for a lot of applications. Sometimes you've got to lock people out if we're going to start moving forward. The point, I think.
Why? You've asserted that, okay, I believe that you believe that,
yes,
but I don't
do.
See why it's actually the case. Because why we have to say, no, you can't have it.
It's my viewpoint, in the same way that what you're saying isn't necessarily actually the case.
So, okay, back your viewpoint up.
Well, to develop because this cut-down
application. Do you think it would be reasonable to say that we only support some languages in our application, so we're not going to bother translating it to anybody? If anyone gives us another...
That's a different point of view, surely.
I don't understand... Why they're different? Why is it not reasonable to say we only support some languages?
I wouldn't say languages, because languages, at the end of the day, languages do change and languages do evolve, but they evolve over hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah, but
the core language,
doesn't actually stop you from creating the program.
Let me finish my point. What I'm saying is that languages are used by people across the world and they basically don't change, right? So language support it should be implicit for every language. The point I'm making is that we're talking about enhancements that make that application work better for people, right?
Yes.
Right? Now, the point, what I'm saying is that you've criticised Matt for basically saying, you know, it's irresponsible to fucking say fuck you to a certain amount of people, but I think it's equally irresponsible to not embrace technical change because you want to make sure that the ZX81 users can keep using your application.
What I'm trying to tell you is precisely that you don't have to say there's stuff we're not going to do. Everything is possible, backwardly compatible, right the way back.
I think there's
no necessary reason why you'd have to say we're not going to have this advanced thing in our app because we can't make it work backwards. The reason I use the phrase progressive enhancement is precisely because of that. You take advantage of the new technologies as they become available, absolutely. And there will be some things, agreed with you, there will be some things which are genuinely not possible. Right, and if your
Thank
application
you.
Inherently depends on those things, and I can't think of much at all that you could not do in an old browser, then okay, fine. But
the only
surely
group of people I care about that you mentioned were basically people who have accessibility problems. But to me, that shouldn't be a problem of having switched off JavaScript. It should be a problem of the browser manufacturers or coders, whatever you want to call them, making it so that you can use Java accessibly. However that would be done. I mean, I'm not a coder.
And,
I don't know.
And people are working on it at the moment.
Great,
and
brilliant.
And the browser manufacturers are listening.
So then that means that you don't have to cut them out, then that's brilliant.
You're ending up developing, you're going to have to develop two versions of your app. One for an enabled version of the browser and one for a disabled version of the browser.
No, that's precisely not what you do. That's exactly what Gmail have done. They've basically got basic HTML version and the snazzy HTML version.
Well,
you don't have to develop two versions.
No, but you're saying that you basically detect the capabilities of the browser and apply chunks of code relevant to those capabilities.
Yes.
You're still maintaining lots of different code paths in the same application.
Yes, you are.
Which is the same as maintaining two different applications.
Not really, because it's exactly the same as deploying a GTK application on a GNOME desktop or not on a GNOME desktop. If it's on a GNOME desktop, it'll pick up some of the GNOME stuff. If it's not on a GNOME desktop, it won't pick up some of the GNOME stuff.
Mm. I don't understand, though, why there's a a philosophical dividing line between a web app and a desktop app. And the reason I have a big problem with this is not because I think that drop-down menus should be in just websites should be an IE-only thing or something like that. You know, I'm not saying anything like that should happen. I think that things should be as available to everyone, as many people as possible, and, you know, we shouldn't block information from going to certain audiences or anything like that. What I'm saying is that, from what I can see, I can't see a way that you could have a rich web application like Google Docs that degrades gracefully to the extent that someone could use it through links. Viewing documents, brilliant, but
there's a cutoff. It then just becomes, there's a cutoff, isn't
it? Then, doesn't it just become, and I'll carry on with the Google Docs example, doesn't it just become a web form with a submit button?
I mean, yes. At some point there's a cutoff where there's
right.
where it becomes so shit because the technology is not there in the browser to make it happen. That is it worth continuing? It basically turns into a web form
because Google Docs wants to be a word processor. It doesn't want to be a text box,
and nobody would want to use that experience anyway.
So I don't understand.
Who wouldn't? When Matt decides to send me one of his brand new exciting Google Docs, I'd quite like to be able to read that document on the train on my mobile phone.
I didn't say read.
We're talking about editing.
Reading it is a different thing.
I can't see any reason why I can't pop it up and make a 2-line change to it and then send it back, rather than having to wait 2 days until I get home and then use my laptop because that's got Firefox on it.
So what?
But you've just said that it's not worth dealing with them kind of people. Because the law of diminishing returns.
I'd say there's a point when supporting essentially legacy browsers or legacy users, and I use legacy, I know that it's often not legacy because there's mobile phones and things like that, you know. I can understand that there's situations where people won't be able to use your application. Yes. But the point I'm making is that at some point, it's like the discussion in the past about usability. At some point, you've got to make a decision about what people are going to use your application.
What the reason I think that you're coming at it from the wrong direction. You're thinking, we build an incredibly rich, exciting app, and then we basically, in order to support people like Lynx, you have to fucking keep chopping bits out of it until it gets right down to the bottom. But what you do is you start off and you build a simple version. That's what you build, the simple version, and then you know it works everywhere. It'll work on a browser someone invents tomorrow, it'll work when someone invents the mind to Ethernet interface, and it'll work with that, and then you enhance it.
Question.
For
I'm number
people.
One in the list for
question.
That, by the way.
You've already shaved.
I think it's a great theory. I think it really is a great theory. Is anyone actually doing this?
Yeah. People are, but
on a big scale.
But not as much as they should be.
Exactly.
Name one.
Yeah. Name one. Name one who we'd heard, we're going to have heard of.
Well, 37 Signals people do it.
What do they do?
But
progressive enhancement of applications.
Basecamp.
Name an application that they've done then.
Basecamp.
They're not exactly rich editing experiences.
Exactly. They're not really much beyond a normal website.
Yeah, they're not much different to a shitty PHP application that I'd write.
Yeah, but what I don't understand is when you say name one who's doing it, there are only a couple of dozen rich editing applications on the web.
Hence the question.
And okay, out of the first 12 people who've done it, none of them have. I agree with you.
Right. So the point is that that nobody's used this technique for creating something comparable to something like Google Docs that you're aware of.
Not that I'm aware
right.
of.
Right.
Okay.
So it might not even be feasible from a business perspective or a development perspective to do something like this, you know, from what you're saying.
The best thing I can come up with, if you imagine you were writing a GNOME application, right? I appreciate, this is a bit boring for non-developer people. But in order to write a proper, really well-integrated GNOME application, something like Evolution, there's loads of stuff you ought to tie into. You ought to, when you ask someone for a password, save it into the GNOME keyring.
Yeah.
You ought to, when you want to think about dates, talk to Evolution Data Server and the GNOME calendar. You ought to talk to Avahi to do zero-conf configuration when you're looking for servers on the local network. You don't have to do any of that. You can start off with your core application, doesn't do any of those integration things. But you basically need to slot all those other stuff in, and when you finally done all that, you've got all of those things done, you'll have the perfect GNOME application. It'll integrate properly with Deskbar, it'll work properly with stuff like that. But basically nobody is writing applications that actually do all the stuff GNOME applications should do to be the perfect GNOME app. People are working towards it. Some, you know, the Evolution people are pretty high up on this list, for example, but no one's actually done it all.
Chicosha's very integrated.
Yeah.
Massively integrated. I'd say it's one of the most integrated.
Okay.
Seriously. So,
that's the sort of thing.
I think that's only partially true. A lot of GNOME applications are hooking in.
They are hooking. I totally agree with you. But they're not hooking in everywhere that they could be.
So I understand what you're saying now.
But you're wrong.
No, that's the usual Lagradius statement.
I'm fine if people think I'm wrong. No problem with that at all. I just want to make sure that you understand the point of view. You disagree with my actual point of view, rather than what you think, people are going to have some views on this in the
Lagradia community, which is good.
Now that you've explained it, and rather than just going apoplectic, that's great. the point is, though, that I think it applies to probably 90% of the applications that people would write at the moment as web applications. Random figure, 90%, but you know. But I think there are things like Google Spreadsheets where perhaps it would be just... I don't see... You would lose so much of the functionality, perhaps, of it without JavaScript, for example, that it just wouldn't be what it's intended to be. It would just be a weird...
Take Google Spreadsheets as an example, very quick. Google Spreadsheets as an example. Do you remember the old days where you used to have to hit F9 to recalculate all the fields in a spreadsheet?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah? Why would it not be like that? Imagine if it was just a load of text boxes in a grid, and then you had to click the recalculate button to recalculate all the numbers. That's exactly... if you build an application... If you build try and build a rich web application, build it without JavaScript, and then use JavaScript to enhance it, then what you end up with is a circa 1986, 87 DOS application.
Right.
But people still did work with them, and they all worked,
you know.
You've
got to develop two versions of your app then, haven't you?
No!
so you could develop it like that, and then you could gracefully, upgrade based on what they've got. And you could have something that's perfectly like, to use the example again, Google Spreadsheets, but that starts off at this kind of...
But if I pick it up on my BlackBerry, it'll be Lotus 1-2-3 for DOS, from about 1986.
Put it this way.
But it means I can still add up the numbers and get a sum,
and
I can still read your spreadsheet.
Yeah.
If someone's developed the equivalent of something like Google Docs, a rich editing experience, and
which
they're using
proper graceful enhancement.
Yep. Then I think I'd be much more inclined to agree with you. I just think it's the theoretical nicety that
I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I reckon there'll be people who mail us in and say this does it, whether it does or not, I don't know. But do please mail us with your suggestions of.
Yeah.
If you shake your phone, it doesn't get text messages quicker. John O'Bacon.
No, I was hearing some buzzing in the old lug oil.
Right, okay. All right, I understand now, and the theory's great, and I hope that people do things like
that.
Can we
have
a big
hug
now that you can create things that, what is it, enhance gracefully?
Yeah.
Great.
Progressive enhancement.
It's Enhance 2.0.
It's Pipe Dream, isn't it?
That was the Amiga game, wasn't it?
Pipe Dream.
Yeah, you had to connect pipes together to let the coloured water flow through.
You did.
Thanks for that.
I never want to see your coloured water float through.
Hang on, Abe.
We know that you like
seeing golden water.
Allegedly.
A legendary piss lover.
I refute it on air. End of the show, emails, yada yada yada.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for sending these short emails.
Yes, God bless you for that.
Thanks.
Loads of short emails this week.
We don't like long emails.
It's an attention span thing, to be honest.
It is.
And we're talking about your attention span, audience, because it's for you that we do it.
Yeah, yes,
we like to get through the emails.
Yeah.
Keep them funny, keep them short.
I'll start to keep a tradition going. Marcus writes in with the subject of "you cocks." So I thought I'd pick that one as the first one.
Thank you, Marcus.
In the latest episode, 4-11, you managed to reach a new low. Please lay off the bloody scat, and I'm looking at you here, John.
What, when did we mention scat?
Oh, I've bound to have.
When did we mention scat? I'm a scat man,
He has a question about Lug Radio Live.
Yes.
Would a talk about the beauty and the coolness of Haskell stand a chance of being accepted for a talk at Lug Radio Live?
I think so.
And is he an Inspire employee?
Be a pretty short talk. Yeah, go ahead.
I personally wouldn't mind. Yeah,
yeah, no, we'd be interested.
And we're going to get on to some call for papers later on.
We are.
But he finishes off by saying, fuck off and record a better episode next time. By the way, love the show. Smiley.
Yep, we'd love to hear you. Drop us a mail.
It's Magnus. Did I say Marcus?
You did.
Oh, Magnus Sternon.
Drop us a mail at show@lugradio.org with a proposal for your talk, how long it's going to be and how big a room. I mean, I'm sure we've got a room
emails.
Where you and no one else in
here. This is emails.
Okay, yes. Now, it's the legendary question, which way round do we go?
Let's go Matthew P. Ravel.
Matthew P.
It's counterclockwise, audience, for if you're keeping up stats or something, I don't know.
We always sit in approximately the same seat.
Fucking not do counterclockwise.
It's clockwise.
Ah, slash me. So it's confused.
Matthew Walser says that he'd like to run a big demo thing at Lug Radio Live. So yeah, he can do that.
But he is the waffle of Dot, isn't he?
He is waffle of Dot, and we think that'd be cool, actually.
We
do. Yep. He also says, though... Oh, by the way, Aid, you referenced Ignatian. Oh, the hilarity. I don't understand why that's funny.
I don't understand. What's wrong with the Lug Radio Hardcore seem to think it's quite funny that you referenced Ignatian and you're an old man.
Why?
But I don't even know what Ignatian is.
It's that shitty pod... that really that's interesting... yeah, I've never listened to it. It's that podcast that the Dig guys do. Yeah.
All right. We'll take this offline, mate.
Yeah. He's going to take... We'll take this outside.
Yeah. Let's park it
whatever,
for now.
Whatever.
Come, Bacon.
Face, bothered face.
Email email from John Thomas.
Stop
it. Fucking cock. For, it's called Breathe Into the Microphone. Dear Lug Radio, on your last episode, someone was breathing into the microphone. I found this most offensive, and it was quite proper of Jono to call out the offender. I'm looking forward to seeing you gentlemen in California. I suggest San Francisco, as it's cooler in the summer, and more centrally located. Plus, there are plenty of men willing to suit all of your needs. Thank you for that. Sincerely, John. Apparently in England my name is referenced to a penis.
Yes, it is.
Mr. Thomas.
Two pieces of information there. Yes, your name is a dick. And secondly, we're not coming to America anymore.
Well, you say that.
I hate Canonical.
You say that, but I've got some news maybe for you later.
Oh, maybe.
So.
For us?
Generally, for Lug Radio Live.
Oh, right. Do we know this news?
No.
Really? That's what you're going to tell us later.
Oh, okay.
So I'll tell everyone on there. Oh, cool. It's not that interesting.
Okay. Matt's going on holiday to America. Mr. Akback and Sackquarius.
Will Thompson writes in to say, our radical ideas about commercial tie-ins have already occurred to other people. Amarok's got a built-in music store, which talks to Magnitude.
Doesn't stop it being shit.
I don't know, I looked at some screenshots of it the other day, it looks quite good.
I tried to use it.
What, Amarok or...
Amarok?
I don't like Amarok.
So complicated you could use an aircraft simulation yoke to control the damn
thing. It is KDE.
I must confess,
frequently asked question number one, do I need KDE to run it? No.
No, I use it in GNOME, and okay. I still didn't like it.
I must confess I haven't used Amarok, because I don't really have an opinion on it. I know lots of people like it, and apparently they've got a they've sorted out the tie-in to Magnitude. So
as has Rhythmbox.
Yeah. I'm sure someone wrote in and said that Rhythmbox had done it as well.
Adam Zimmerman.
You see, that's interesting, because that means people are doing their best to tie open source applications in with kind of open sourcey sorts of providers.
Or they're the only deal with them.
Which is hella cool. Incidentally, right, you know we've got the Freesound extension in Jukosha.
Yes.
Someone else has written a Freesound integration thing. I can't remember what application it is, but I saw it yesterday.
What's Freesound?
Freesound's like an online archive of Creative Commons clips.
Yeah. Johnny uses it to search for clips so that they go...
So go...
Instead of hearing the word... Cunt!
Do your...
Let me write the title.
Excellent. Okay, Neil Munro writes in with a...
pen.
He's talking about breasts, Johnny. You might want to pay attention.
Okay.
Johnny suddenly paid attention.
What names do you know for breasts? Is that it?
No. He says that it's completely irrelevant, but I was in Ephesus 2 years ago.
He was in feces?
Ephesus. Apparently it's in Greece.
Okay.
And there were carvings of women with only one breast.
The Amazons.
Yeah, so this historian who was taking them around mentioned that women did actually remove one of their breasts in order to fire bows without their right breast getting in the way. And then he says, right, in an attempt to make you laugh and get me into Lug Radio Live cheaper, I attempt to...
Our first concession request.
Yeah, it's point you to my mention on the Darwin Awards page, and I'm not going to give you the link. so bollocks to that. But yeah,
he mentioned on the Darwin Awards.
But
he's alive.
Since he's written in, he must be sterile then. You're allowed to sterilise yourself. you have to remove yourself from the gene pool.
Right.
Do you want the link?
Some guy blew off his dick with a firework or something and got in the Darwin Awards.
I got hit in the leg once with the firework.
I like this, the way they say removed.
My mate, well, not really a mate, an acquaintance, welded his dick to a light bulb. Did I tell you about that?
Yes, you did tell us about that.
Fell over and his his helmet got welded to a light bulb. And when
crumbs.
Apparently, the first thing he shouted out was "Mum," which and his mum came running through. He's like, "What's wrong?" He's like, "Nothing."
Did he turn the light off?
He pulled it off. Apparently, he's got a permanent scar. And this is the worst thing: there was a bit of skin connected to the light bulb when he removed said penis. It actually burnt off.
Ooh, lampshades. See, they're not just for decoration, are they?
Another one
Matthew,
of my little.
Matthew, please rebel.
So, sorry, I thought I'd stop since we're so, because it's funny.
So we were having a meeting the other day.
I totally blagged it. Per Svensson, which doesn't sound like a name to me at all. It just sounds like
cream.
Some kind of economics thing. There are 70.
Let's call the first name Per.
There are 72 Per Svensson. Per is his surname.
Oh.
It's probably something like Peter in Swedish. Imagine my surprise when I found this in the window of a nearby pawnbroker. Apparently,
this.
It's a really powerful tube amplifier that bears the proud name Beard. I'm thinking of going into the shop and trying it out by simply shouting Beard into a hooked-up microphone. Of course, in Swedish, it would be Beard.
Yeah. Who was it, Per?
Per Svensson from Gothenburg.
Per sent us a picture of this amplifier.
Did he?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Not in the email.
Will it be in the show notes?
Doesn't support imagery, I don't believe.
No, it doesn't.
But yeah, it's very cool.
That's really hard and I can't be arsed with it.
Send us in your pictures of chin and beard related objects and, of course, of your cats and dogs that you've renamed to open source names. We haven't had any of those for a while.
We haven't, actually.
We haven't. So, quick email from someone from Joseph M. Gaffney. I'm not sure if he's related to Dean Gaffney, ugliest man alive.
Has he got a job?
I think Joseph has probably had more TV experience than Dean. He's just saying Qtopia is available on the GPL and can be developed for without restrictions.
Right.
And on a related note, Andrew Mason sends us an email about the Green Phone. Dear sirs, the reason why the Green Phone, quote, looks a bit shit, unquote.
I've heard of Andrew
Mason.
Who on
earth would suggest such a thing?
I've heard of Andrew Mason. Who is he?
I believe he set up some kind of secret organisation.
And feels Perry's like son.
And feel
they make
like
wine, don't they?
Perry.
Rick Wakeman played the keyboards in that song.
Really?
Fucking excellent.
Get on with it. Shut up, Jono. Get on with it.
Didn't play the keyboard on that on the theme tune, though, did he?
He's old enough.
Not, you know, the Aussie song. Anyway, the reason why the Green Phone looks a bit shit and feels like a phone from 2 years ago is because it's a reference platform. It's not in any way...
Oh, right, so it's referencing shit phones from 2 years ago, is it?
Exactly, yeah.
It's a demonstration example of if you wanted to build a shit Linux-powered phone, this is what it would look like.
It's great, you know.
Far too unkind. You should be encouraging these people.
Why? It's closed source.
It's not. Green Phone isn't.
Sorry, the platform Hello. That it runs on is closed source. It might have a Linux kernel or something.
Anyway, it's
what?
Not...
What?
I thought the cute...
Qtopia is open source.
Qtopia,
as referenced by Joseph M. Gaffney. Which 10 seconds ago.
Which he read 30 seconds ago.
You pinice.
Green phone's open.
Fucking penice. So penice. Depends which way you want to say it. It's not in any way intended to be sold or otherwise distributed in any way.
Right.
Anyway. It's there purely SO. Developers can test their applications and write applications for the Qtopia platform before this guy had some kind of attack while writing this email before spending money getting a phone
made.
Bear
in mind that there's an outside chance it might be the mail reformatting script rather than the
okay.
Before you beat him up too
no, it's
much.
Not the mail. You fix the script because we've got the last three words of each sentence. Anyway, he says that way developers aren't writing applications for a phone that will be a year old when they finish. Trolltech aren't selling phones, they are selling Qtopia. I say bollocks. They are selling phones. They're selling the fucking Green Phone. Trolltech
like,
will sell you the fucking Green Phone.
Yeah, but that's just like, Timmy.
So
it's
Perry Mason.
£5,000 graphics.
Perry Mason.
Hang on a minute, isn't the Green Phone just a reference platform?
It's a reference platform. It's referencing my fucking beard. That's what it's referencing. So, yeah. So, thank you very much, Dean Gaffney and Perry Mason.
A guy here, Matthew McDonald Wallace.
Did he have a farm?
Did he then talk a lot about, like, it being his freedom or something?
And on that farm, he chatted shit.
E-I-O. Fucking E-I-O.
E-I-O.
I-F-I-F up.
Come on, then, old McDonald.
Matthew McDonald Wallace.
Did he own a farm?
Right.
EI, fucking EI.
Did he paint his blue?
He writes in to say he's attempting to set up a lug.
Oh.
But he has a hole in his bucket.
And since we're Lug Radio, he thought we might be out of help.
Okay. As like Alan that. Pope will tell you, wrong place.
RTFM.
Where's no. his point, I think, is that he's tried to, and he can't find any M's to FR.
WTF?
So, sorry. Where should he look?
Google it. Oh, helpful. Really helpful, John.
JFGI.
I can't believe he hadn't thought of that. Oh, no, wait, he did. You fucking moron.
What's it say it again?
What country is it in?
Fucking pay attention, when you're speaking. I've forgotten.
Speak to Popey on Hashlog Radio.
I thought you might be able to help me find something other than the Linux Advocacy how-to that gives ideas about where and how to set up and, more importantly, market a lug. So, yeah, the lug.org.uk people might be good, and Popey's a good bloke talking.
This is what the fucking
Popey's lug.org... Popey's sitting there thinking, stop pointing people at me, fucking...
But this is what the fucking lug.org.uk project should be doing.
Seriously,
it's writing documentation like this and best practice and that kind of stuff.
The Hans Lug guys seem to have quite a few ideas on this sort of thing. Yeah. So, if you find people like Tony Tiger in...
In Hashlug Radio.
Loudmouth Popey. Man. Yeah, Loudmouth Man will talk to you at length.
Loud.
Which channel's that?
Hashlug Radio. On irc.freenode.net.
Or just drop them out to the Hanslug mailing list and they may be able to help you.
Yeah, out. Or just email Popey directly. Or
what you're basically saying is stop bothering us, aren't you?
Basically, he started...
Fuck off to your stupid farm and stop it,
well, he says he's trying to document the restart up of Thanet Lug.
What? That's in Kent, isn't it?
Thanet.
Well, it might be Thanet. It might be Thane T.
Isn't that some kind of
I don't know. It could be anywhere.
Isn't Thanet some kind of bipolar medicine?
That's what you get for coughing and laughing at the same time. Sorry about that.
No, I love the way that you go.
Have you got whooping cough?
So he's setting up bipolar lug.
Thanet's in like Essex or Kent or something. But no.
Presumably that means you have to have one meeting in the Arctic and then the next one in the Antarctic, which seems like a long way to go.
Seriously though, Arnold, what you have to do, I would say, is just try and find like-minded people, because at Wolves Lug, for example, we've just sort of sacked up everyone that didn't agree with
us.
For
about 3 years.
Oh, and you have?
I have, actually.
So, yeah, just sack off everyone you don't like we have.
Form your own little radio show, Lug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, kind of like
sorry, we
Bruno said that Lug Radio is his Lug.
Yeah.
So I don't see why everyone else needs one.
Bruno said that once, 4 years ago.
We'll never let him forget it.
Yeah, but he lives in history,
and
boy.
And he's a good man.
A magnificent comment.
And Bruno is going to be speaking at Lug Radio Live.
What about?
He doesn't 100% know this.
Bruno.
No, I was pestering him the other day that he was going to speak.
He wasn't that keen on the idea, but we don't give a shit.
We don't give a shit what that French onion-wearing bastard says.
Lamb-burning, work-shy peasant that he is. He will be speaking at Lug Radio Live.
Lamb burning.
Yeah, with the track lambs out in Burton. Anyway, Chris writes in, and
hello, Chris.
His subject is compiling a kernel without having a huge beard. Hey guys, I heard one of you mention that you recently tried to install Gentoo.
That was you, Balma.
That was indeed me. And
sack that fucker off, didn't you?
And
also, I mean, we're kind about Gentoo, and we embrace all Linux distributions equally.
And the compiling a kernel was a major stumbling block for them, stroke me. It was in the episode She Gives Me a Biscuit. In case you did... which was a quality title. Anyway, we just backslap each other.
You see all the crap that people posted? No, actually, it was first said by...
It was
by
some Australian cricketer or something. But
well, whoever it was...
It's
what
a great deal funnier if it's Hal Bishop, though.
But what makes anyone think that they're right? Were they there when it was first said? And had they listened to everyone else on Earth?
And to be honest...
To make
so
sure
long
they hadn't said it first.
So long as somebody said... Because every time I fuck your mum, she gives me a biscuit. It doesn't really matter who it was. It could be my dad, and it would still be funny.
Point of information.
Anyway, sorry,
it is legendary. However, I'm going to tear you back to the emails. In case you didn't know, there is now a neat GPL'd O'Reilly book about making your own kernel. And it's at www.kroach.com.
Ken Roach, interesting. No,
/
Greg
Crowe.
Greg Crowe.
Okay, N. Talk all over the URL. Don't worry about that.
It's example.com/board.
It breaks the hell of steps that you really need to do. Explains all the options, and basically you manage to compile this a latest stable kernel, first time, and actually makes his wireless work better than before. Not bad at all. He even wrote about it on his blog. So thanks for that, Chris.
What was the URL?
He wrote about it on his blog.
Oh, we'll have to read
it. He also said that this is a great show. It's good to listen to some good old British banter while he's locked away in his cubicle in the heart of Yankee land.
Is he Dilbert?
Yankee doodah dandy day, whatever.
What was the URL since we talked all over it?
Yeah, you're interested now, are you?
Not really. Yeah, we've just been polite.
www.kro.
So I've got an email here from Dave.
He throws paper on the floor.
Crower.com.
Hey, don't, you're going to pick that up, aren't you?
Because it makes the rest of the floor look so untidy, doesn't it?
Moving swiftly, aren't we?
Dave mentions, we were yabbering on about open source hardware or something like Dave Hughes. He says, basically,
he likes
there are projects to create cheap 3D printers. In the case of RepRap, one specifically able to replicate the majority of its own parts. And I was talking to Robert Collins about this the other day.
Yeah. He is lifeless.
And it's really interesting, because basically you've got these people who are literally creating Earl Grey tea hot machine. A replicator from Star Trek.
Sort of.
There was one at LCA. A replicator. And
how the hell do they work? They're brilliant.
Fascinating.
That's magic.
The same materials.
They make stuff out of the material that it makes things out of, but you can't do everything. I mean, you can sort of print a circuit board or whatever. It is kind of like a replicator would be, in the same way that you have to invent a penny farthing before you can get as far as a car.
Sure. But it's, I mean, it doesn't just take... scour the surrounding environment for appropriate molecules, and
not quite like
great
it,
if it did that.
It's on the roadmap.
But he says,
Eric Drexler's just about to buy into the project.
He says, "Is this an example of open source hardware development?"
And more importantly, would Eric approve?
Yes.
Well, you see, I thought
Eric would expressly disapprove.
In this case, would Bruce Perrins approve?
That gun replicator. That is an interesting example. I mean, as far as I'm aware, RepRap can make something the same shape as a real object. You can't actually make actual real objects. You couldn't have it print another RepRap print.
Isn't that the name of Steve Martin in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
Rep-rap. I don't know, because it's not my favourite film.
The Jerks.
Are they all
brilliant
Planes,
film.
Trains and Automobiles?
That is
Ruprecht.
Ruprecht, that's it.
No.
Mr Bacon, do you have another one?
Let me have a look. Sure, have a look.
Hang on.
I've got, right, very quick one, and then a bit of a longer one. John Wesley, who is the name of our drummer, who's no longer our drummer.
And also the name of the guy who wrote for a Thousand Tons. And started
Mechanism. He did, and many, many other things.
And if anybody wants to join Seraphidian, Ingwalvampton, if you have good double bass technique,
then...
It's
the subject podcast quality.
Go to
double bass, he's doing jazz now.
Good double bass technique. Go to myspace.com/Seraphidian. Or email me.
Says the bloke who the other day was saying, oh no, I won't ever join a social networking site.
And also said, I wouldn't ever use Lug Radio to shill my own stuff. I can't believe you'd do that, Matt.
Well, I have.
Fuck you. Bacon, your space sucks.
he says, nice video of John having quizzed about all that is important in the open source world. It's this video that's gone around where LCA, I think we should do this for Lug Radio Live, guys with a camera went around and said a bunch of things, and you had to say whether you thought it scored or whether it sucked.
Mm.
And it was quite like a little montage. Need a fucking montage.
When I was watching all the Lug Radio videos, I didn't see that one.
This is Fuller Grade Alive 2007.
Ah, right.
We should definitely have it in there. If you were actually helped to organise the event, you'd know how to do this. Our friend Mr. Ben.
That gets you out of it, right?
It does, yeah. Okay. Our friend Mr. Ben sends an email.
Hi, Ben.
Are you reading two emails?
Yeah, because that one was tiny. Click and run and stuff. Thought it was at least a season since I dropped a mail to the show box, so here we are.
We always like to hear from Mr. Ben.
Lazy Scottish shite.
English.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lazy wannabe jock shite. In the most recent show where you talked about package management and the like, I had a couple of ideas that I thought we'd share. One, it would be nice if there was a file format that worked on any system that used apt. That would indicate the system, such as apt-get or apt-rem, that would indicate that the system not only...
And what would that system be? Would it be Ubuntu, by any chance?
Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's not very interesting. Number two, whenever any discussion about package formats happens, in particular when people start talking about about how it's easier to download and install stuff under Windows, I'm amazed that many people are not aware of GDebi.
Huh?
Graphical dev installer that comes with GNOME, or at least with Ubuntu. That's where you download a deb and then it pops up a little.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
Yeah, I use it all the time on Fedora.
That's the problem with it. I mean, it's a very good way of installing
really,
debs. Yeah, that's the killer with it. It's a very good way of installing Debs. We don't dispute that completely.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see it, but unless you turn on the phone, though, isn't it? Sack off Debs.
I mean, bonus. So basically, aid pipes Mr. Ben to DevNull.
Number three!
/ ignore Mr. Ben.
If it is possible to do number one, which I didn't read out, I wonder whether it's not, whether it would not or not be, if possible, to use this sort of wrapper around binary files, and thus use it as a method that vendors could use to distribute software without necessarily having to package for each system individually, particularly as apt has become more widespread.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Just a few thoughts. Also, if you're feeling charitable, you could give my impending trip to Mozambique a mention, as I'm still short of about equals a 3,400 of sponsorship.
No, 400 quid. 400 quid.
Wasn't he the guy who's from Tipton who's locked up in Guantanamo?
I don't know.
Mr. Ben?
Well, Mr. Ben?
No, Mozambique. It's Mozambique.
It's Mozambique, you dickhead. Anyway, go to Jedi Moves.
Aren't there the people who make the web browser?
What's he doing in Mozambique? Is he doing some charitable work?
He's doing, charitable work. Right. Sorry, charitable.
You were thinking perhaps he was going there to steal people's wallets, then come back to Jockland.
I thought he was just basically going off.
It's taking Iron Brew over there.
It's increasing
special Iron Brew delivery.
He's Iron Brew, Urn Brew. Outreach officer.
He's going out there to do charitable work, you miserable bastard.
He's not. He's going out there to batter anything that they eat. Meat and batter. Everything can be improved with meat and batter. Still enjoying the
people in Mozambique, they can then eat deep fried nothing.
Anyway.
Still enjoying the show after 3.5 seasons worth, even if you do talk...
Maybe not so much after this.
Even if you do talk a load of shite sometimes, like in the game segment.
Mr. Ben's actually quite an knowledgeable bloke.
He is. He's a lovely guy, and we're going to see him in July. Look great in your life.
Apart from
think about
games.
Lifting up your email now. I'm reading the next one.
I thought we were going clockwise, Matthew.
Sorry, I had
we
to are. Rearrange myself for a second.
Well, if he read one and now you're going to read one, surely that's anti-clockwise.
Oh, right, is he out of this loop?
Apparently.
Right, I'm going to read one. Toby Cooper sends us an email with the subject line, a few corrections. So that always starts off well.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Maybe we were wrong on something.
So regarding the iPhone discussion and OpenMoko, he says, contrary to the UK and US, many countries don't have vendor lock-in with mobiles. So he says... he says, in Belgium, the land of beer, waffles and fries, fuck's sake. He says there are protection laws specifically to prevent that sort of thing. And he says, I fart in your general direction. Number two, ACK or AID mentioned 3D software on Commodore 64.
That was me.
I presume
it was Jono.
Talking about the Sublime 3D construction kit, half on memories of frustration. Three, I started listening to the show this season and I'm a bit lost when it comes to the beard and chin references. Snooping around on the web, I found out that Jono's facial hair seemed to be involved, but after hearing the talk about examining one's brown eye in the mirror, I was overcome with strange ideas, usually associated with goat seed. Would you please clarify the situation for us new users?
I think it has been clarified, but I don't know what episode.
I don't know which episode it was either.
It's not the beard and chin thing, right? To clarify once and for all, first of all, it's nothing to do with my beard, particularly.
Or,
right?
Or innocence.
In the 80s, when most of us, with the exception of Aid, were at school. Aid was at school in the 60s.
Aid was already old enough to be a paedophile in the 80s.
Aid offered us all sweeties in the 80s. Anyway, in the 80s, there was a British footballer called Jimmy Hill who had a very, very long chin. For some reason, and none of us know why, his chin was referenced as a source of falsehood.
It's not just his chin, it's his chin.
It was
chin
a
in
long
general.
Chin. If someone said to you, hey, do you know what I did last night? I kissed your sister on the foot. And you say, you didn't do that. You'd say, my fucking beard, or my chin, or...
Or chinny recon.
Chinny recon, which is a very clever pun on words between my chin and recon.
I reckon.
And,
Or Billy Wiggum, if you were in the North East.
That spun off the chinny raccoon.
Not by the hairs on my chinny chin chin.
Yeah. And then there was variations like...
said.
Beard. Which is beard. And then, of course, you've got stock exchange things, like BRD. CHN.
Stock tickers, like RCN.
RCN for raccoon, BRD for beard, CHN for chin. Excellent. So that's where it kind of comes from. For
isn't,
some reason...
Isn't BRD the airport that you fly into if you're coming to Lug Radio Live 2007?
That's BHX.
BHX. That's
so where does Billy
BRD's
from?
The... Oh, no, wait, no, it isn't.
BSD is the one airport where you fly in and get shouted at for using Linux.
No, I thought BSD was the airport that no one ever flew into.
If you fly in...
Supporting is not support... Flying is not supported in this version of BSD.
Whipping you in.
What?
You fly there, don't people start whipping you?
But yes, that's the reason.
John Wesley writes in.
Again.
Sod him. He wants to congratulate us on a well-recorded and generally well-rounded podcast.
Thank you.
I especially like the swearing. Unfortunately, this means that podcasts that I've listened to sound shit. Case in point, the Ubuntu operating system podcast.
What we can't bollock someone else.
I challenge you to listen for more than 5 minutes without wanting to hurt people for making it.
Now, we've never called out crap podcasts in it before, and believe me,
we're not. This is somebody who's writing in.
So, okay, that's the... Okay. Which podcast do we think is shit?
You may well want to listen for yourselves to make yourself feel better about producing your own excellent quality podcast. Thanks for ruining all other podcasts I listen to.
Cool.
We
probably ought to make clear. John Wesley's views do not represent the views of Blog Radio.
Well, they may.
I've never heard it. I wouldn't know.
I don't really listen to podcasts, but one show that I do think is well put together, well made, is the guys of the Linux
Blog
Action
Radio.
Show. The Linux Action Show, I think, do a good job. It's like, welcome to the Linux Action Show.
Aren't they those Mac users?
Splitters.
My name's John. I really like the Linux Action Show because they interviewed me
twice.
So predictable.
I haven't been interviewed twice. Where did that come from?
My memory.
Laszlo was on there from the Chikosha project.
But we know that they give out false information. You might say it, but they give it out.
Do they?
Yeah, we're gonna be fucking in America. All right, so.
That was me though, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But they gave it out.
They gave it out via me speaking on the show.
Yeah, they published
it. They can't be held responsible if I tell lies on the show.
Ben Francis.
It wasn't lies, just to clarify to people.
I do believe you may misunderstand the nature of publication here. That's exactly what you can do.
Yes, I misunderstand publication. I've never been involved in fucking publication before.
No, well, exactly. I'm quite sure the time was going to go, it wasn't us, it was our report. So,
Jono, all of those books you've written, you've never been involved in. Right,
okay. Never written all those articles.
Ben Francis says... something about, it's my last email. He says,
fuck you. He's going to commit suicide. It's his last email.
Yeah.
Alright, okay.
The Hula Project.
Then we are very privileged. Thank you very much, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Hula Project, due to lack of information from Novell, have created a fork called Bongo, because Novell owned the name Hula.
Yeah, that's going to get it released.
They don't drink down the jungle.
Oh, yeah. He says, but a matter of days after the Bongo website was set up, Novell announced that they'd sold Netmail and Hula to a company called Messaging Architects. And basically, he's just writing about the whole kind of confusion around
basically,
who
Novell
owns it, what they're
going
to do,
right?
And
just get used to it.
Yeah.
Novell aren't evil.
That's not particularly evil.
So how are Novell evil?
Sold out to Microsoft.
Anyway. So if you want to know more about...
Shadow Lynch <left speeches. laughs>
That's a stupid fuck up on their behalf, but they've done some very good stuff.
Yeah, but they've nullified it all by doing this stupid thing.
Although I have to say, the Hula thing
was a no more in that email,
man. Disaster. Lot of excitement, lot of hope, all down the pan.
Ah, just use Imbra.
Basically, Ben
commission again. You must have made quite a lot of commission.
I'm not in it for the money.
Just the Zimbra.
Just the free Zimbra t-shirt.
Right, yeah. We're running out of time.
If you don't know what Ben Francis has got to say on that, then I think you just have to ask him yourself.
Yep.
Because we're running out of time by the looks of it.
Importantly!
Log!
7th!
Radio Live!
8th!
July!
7th and 8th of July! Log Radio Live!
2007!
It's going to be fucking wicked. I'm so excited.
I believe you just can't hide it.
I was so excited the other day, I had to have a gentleman's shuffle.
You're so excited. You're made out of chocolate and on a chocolate roller coaster, just like the Crunchy advert.
It was just like that.
Yep.
It's going to be brilliant. So, we need speakers.
New venue, by the way.
It's a couple there. Yeah, so what are we going to talk about first? It's on the 7th and 8th of July. Now, people. We've got some special deals on hotels. Right? We've got a brilliant venue. We've got a wonderful city for it to happen in. Yep. And all of this shit...
Jono has grown his beard back so he can shave it off again.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't it?
No.
So, the basics. 7th and 8th of July in Wolverhampton at the Lighthouse Media Centre.
When was that?
7th and 8th of July in Wolverhampton at the Lighthouse Media Centre. Now, Lighthouse Media Centre is literally round the corner. You'll stumble across it. From the train station. You can go to light-house.co.uk and there's some information about it.
It's a brilliant
venue. It's
in
the old Chubb building, which is an old factory where they used to make locks and that.
The venue is brilliant because we've got, it's actually an independent cinema.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's comfortable seats in the seminar rooms, big projection screen, you know, full AV equipment all set
just
up.
Just imagine a cinema.
It's just going to be phenomenal.
We've got lots of different rooms.
There's going to be a big, covered up with like a roofed kind of atrium, so it's going to be lots of natural light where there's going to be other talks and the exhibition going on.
Yep,
it's going
to
be
a bar, a cafe.
Bar and cafe's open. There's going to be wireless internet access in part of the atrium for people who can't get away from the internet.
People who want to spend all frigging day sitting there on IRC rather than actually talking to people, you know.
It's going to be fucking tremendous. But the thing is, what we need is we need speakers. You know, if you've got something interesting, if you've got something interesting that you want to talk about, you can either do a 45-minute talk or
where
a 25-minute talk.
Where can they send them to, Jono? Those papers?
show@lugradio.org.
Once again,
what are we listening for?
show@lugradio.org.
Interestingly, if you've got something you want to demonstrate,
definitely.
Then we're interested in hearing from that too. If it's not really something you've got to do a talk about, but something you'd like to show off, tell us too. It could be part of the exhibition. We want to see people doing cool things. If you've built a Linux computer powered by lemons, we want to hear about it.
Well, you've got a DS powered by Linux.
And
the video won't get fucked up this year.
The exhibition area this year, we want to make it slightly different to previous years. So in previous years, we've had people selling things or telling people about things, which is great. But as Ak was saying, let's have something a bit more interactive. Let's have you here with a bloody flight simulator made out of egg boxes or something like that.
Yeah,
you know.
Naked on the open source software.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, the thing is as well is that this year we want, like, the first year we did Lug Radio Live, as has been much spoken about in the past, first year we did it, we expected 45 people, we got about 250 people showed up.
Yeah.
Last year, I don't know how many we were expecting, but we had a lot more people than we expected. You know, a lot of people showed up. This year, we want to smash, we want to have loads of people.
So we
want to
have more than 500
people. Tell your friends. People. So tell your friends.
And get them to tell their friends.
Tell your enemies.
We're going to rely on you guys helping us to push Lug Radio Live, because it's not just a case, you know, we're going to have a bigger crew this year, we're going to have lots going on, but we need the whole viral marketing, let's tell everybody about it, let's blog about it, let's have lots of little buttons on your websites. We need you guys to help us out, but importantly right now, we need speakers. So if you're interested in speaking, if you know someone who's famous or otherwise, you know,
more interesting
Yeah, we want famous people, but we want regular people as well.
We want interesting people.
Yeah, we want interesting people, whether they're famous or not, really. Yeah. But what I would say, if you're not a speaker or you're not an exhibitor, then as Jono was saying, there are lots and lots of ways you can get involved.
Yes. We're going to have buffs, I guess.
Buffs, definitely.
Yep. But what I was going to say is we're going to have lots of ways for people to get involved, so whether they want to help out with the AV or with just being a crew member or anything like that. So, Stuart, I believe you've got something in line for that.
Where could you find out about all this exciting stuff?
Where could it be?
I wonder.
Not on the interweb.
Yes, indeed. On the interweb, lugradio.org/live/2007.
My God, you got the website up
and running. Did you say interweb? That you complain about that all the time.
Yeah, but I was being ironic.
Being ironic.
I was. It's like fucking Ray A on my wedding day.
The website is live.
What was that website again?
Lugradio.org/live/2007.
Or lugradio.org/live and it'll redirect.
Is that some kind of sim-linking technology?
Some kind of fucking
HTML. It is magnificent. It's a magnificent index.php, if I remember rightly. But I'll get it set up anyway. Yes, lugradio.org/live will take you there.
Cool.
And it's a lovely site.
And you can find out all about it.
You've designed quite a good-looking site there.
Thank you. That's very kind.
The buttons are a bit crazy.
Which makes me
nice.
Wonder why your own site looks so shit.
That you made me laugh when you sent that email. If you can make a site this nice, why does your site look like shit?
Do you remember when
just
newspaper?
Asking, just a question, you know, just interesting.
Do you remember when you had it like a newspaper for a bit?
That's awful. Your site's like a cacophony of bad designs.
Well, you know. Oh, no, well, I'm not interested in your fucking opinion, am I?
So, how much is it going to cost to get into Lug Radio Live?
I believe that it's going to stay the same as ever.
So it's £5 if you want to basically give us proper amount of money, and what's, you know...
For both days.
A decent amount of money.
£5
£5 to get you in for the whole weekend.
Yep, £3 to get in for the whole weekend if you're cheap ass and come up with a good excuse that we can laugh at on the radio.
Yeah, this is important. If you want to get a concession, fine, you can get in for £3, but there are no concessions available on the door. You have to mail
us
beforehand and say why you need a concession.
Yeah, and international visitors will be free.
And we've got to accept it as well.
Yes, international, you lovely people, will be free.
Yep, international visitors are free if you travel from another country. Sorry, another landmass, since all the jocks are not going to blag their way in from now. If you travel from another landmass.
What about people from...
Well, the jocks are from Britain, right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go then.
But they like to travel to the mainland occasionally.
They're from northern England.
That's right. Yeah.
It's the northeast.
Oh, what's that? I think that's a load of bollocking in now, isn't it?
Are we going to mention what hotels we've got arranged?
Look on the website.
But
what's that website again?
Lugradio.org/live.
Woo!
Whistle and float. It's going to be fucking tremendous. I'm so excited about it.
Now, we want... Well, I do anyway. I want some suggestions for what we can do on the Saturday night, because last year we had a party. I've got an idea for what we could do.
Matt thinks we should all go on a ramble across the hill.
why don't we have a poetry boat festival?
You have a sponsored tank top wearing event.
I don't wear tank tops.
I didn't suggest you did.
But perhaps we could all bring an old jacket and then sew leather patches onto the elbows.
I don't know.
That's pretty mean. What was your suggestion?
What about sandal wearing tips?
I do wear sandals. They're good.
So anyway, Matt, what would you like us to do on Saturday evening? Crochet, perhaps.
Well, are we allowed to mention it? My idea.
I don't think we should. I think we shouldn't give, because you know what it's like. You're going to say an idea, and if it doesn't happen, people are still.
Where's the one that we've mentioned before that we were maybe going to do another time?
Oh, that idea. No, yeah. Definitely don't mention it.
Don't mention that.
No.
We're going to be doing something on a Saturday night. Send us your suggestions.
No, we need to make sure that, you know, they don't sue us afterwards.
What? Okay, so the Friday...
No straight man.
No funny man either. The Friday night, we'll probably have a pre-event drinks and everything, as usual.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And sweet, we'll be getting drunk for your pleasure.
Pre-drinks.
Pre-event stuff.
Leave your filthy mind, Mr. Baker.
I can't think of anything else.
Rubber up.
That's it, babes.
Oh, about it. So we're done, yeah? Interesting show. Longer show than usual.
Fucking 11.
Yep, sorry about that.
Yep, so...
CDR, people, we apologise.
CDR, oh, right, yeah.
Fuck them and their legacy technology.
Catch you later, guys.
Blu-ray.
Bye.